Welcome to the Live Wealthy Podcast with Dawn, where we are growing our wealth and our worth at the same time. You ready? Let's go. Well, welcome to the Live Wealthy Show with Dawn, where I teach entrepreneurs how to get more out of their money by teaching them how to maximize their income, their investments, minimizing their debt and taxes, and helping them finally arrive at their own unique version of enough. And today, I am lucky enough to have Mr. Adam Jablin, Jablin on the show with me today, where he has the perfect mustache to show off with all of you. He's a freaking rock star. But we are going to learn from Adam today how he's arrived at his version of enough, how he helps other people arrive at their version of enough. And we're going to have this authentic, real conversation because we're here to provide really good advice and have a good time. So you guys ready? Adam, are you ready?
I'm ready.
You're ready. Let's go. Well, thank you so much for being on the Live Wealthy Show. It's an honor to have you and your mustache with me today. And I really want to just start authentically with, actually, your mustache looks really cool.
I appreciate it, but yes, we'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about it later. But we got handsome Adam with us today, and I really want to know your backstory. I believe we all are doing what we want to do in life because we have some pain. Yeah. From our childhood or adolescence, and we want to understand that pain and why do we do what we do. So tell us a little bit about who Adam is and a little bit about your story.
Absolutely. Dawn, thank you so much. And thank you for teasing that my mustache wasn't trimmed, which I admitted before the show. but a little bit about me becoming enough, right? And I think it's also a journey of always wanting to strive to become enough. But I'll try to give you a quick 5-minute run now. Would that be good?
Yeah, perfect.
So growing up in Tenafly, New Jersey, I was the fat kid. I was the heavy kid. My dad would call me El Chubbo. There was a movie. I grew up in the 80s and early 90s, and there was a movie out then called The Goonies. And his kid with Chunk would do the Chunk Shuffle and roll his belly. And I was always feeling like I wasn't enough. Honestly, I really did. I always felt people were judging me about my body. And that actually, it gave me a superpower, which was it gave me a charismatic, outgoing personality. And I would read people very well. Not for the healthiest reasons. I was reading them because I wanted to be able to make them laugh with me instead of laugh at me. I actually think that's where a lot of comedians get it. Mm-hmm. And when I'm 11 or 12 years old, 1986, we moved down to Boca Raton, Florida, where you could have your shirt off every day and be in the sun and it's hot. And I hated it. I would wear my shirt in the pool and it would still stick to my fat. And I just remember one day saying, I can't do this anymore. I can't live like this anymore. Before you know it, my mom was buying me, back in the day, it was magazines. And she would buy me Muscle and Fitness magazine and Flex magazine. And it wasn't as sophisticated as we were today, right? There's apps, there's nutrition here, there's keto, vegan, paleo. It wasn't like that back in the day. But we just stopped going to this, you know, McDonald's drive-thru and getting me a 6-piece chicken McNugget and fries and Coke, and just started eating grilled chicken and apples, and I started exercising. And in 4 short years, I went from being the fattest kid in the class to being the best built kid in the class. I went from the guys asking me, yo, Adam, how many Oreos did you eat last night? To, yo, man, like, how much can you bench press? And the girls liked me.
The girls.
That worked out. Everything on the outside changed. Everything changed except me. I was still that insecure, fat kid, you know, laugh with me, don't laugh at me. But with the muscles and with the body came a certain amount of coordination and a certain amount of confidence. And I was able to play and hang with the older kids. And at that time, you know, I don't know if you remember this, but there was something just cooler about older kids. They were just cool. They had more freedom. They could do more. They had their own cars first. And there was no peer pressure, but they were experimenting. I just remember they passed the drink, they passed the drug, and I took that first drink, Dawn, and honestly, it fixed something inside of me I did not know was broken. It fixed it. Like, I remember looking at my body like, whoa, I'm here. Like, it lowered that I'm not enough fat kid voice in my head, and I felt like I was the life of the party. And I became the life of the party. And I was the first kid in my high school with a fake driver's license. I went to Arizona State University because it was the number one party school in the country, which it was. And I dominated there, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And I brought that lifestyle mentality all the way into my adulthood, working for a family business until it didn't work. Until I ended up in rehab. And July 14th, 2006 is when my whole life changed. And my spiritual journey really started. And that's when I really started to learn about, spiritually more than anything, that I am enough.
Oh, okay. First of all, I'm super emotional inside. You've hit me on three different things that you said just hit home for me. That's a pretty powerful story. And I love how you started with, it was the weight. And then you fixed your exterior, but then was still broken, right? And then the alcohol made you feel okay in your own skin,
yeah.
Right? And then you want a little bit of that, and then you want a little bit more and a little bit more because you get numb and your tolerance rises, and then you just need more and more and more. And let me ask you this question. How long was it from when you took that first drink? By the way, my daughter goes to ASU, so I know. The party school that she's at.
Way to go, girl.
Right? But the first drink to when you went to rehab, what was that, like 7 years, 10 years? What was that?
Oh, no, that was a good 15-year run, right?
Okay.
Let's say I started, okay. You know, I probably had, you know, I was sneaking some beer here, like this and that when I was younger. But the first time I'm drinking, let's say around 13 or 14, I ended up in treatment at 30. So it was a 15-year slow, progressive, chronic crawl to becoming a full alcoholic. But they say, look, to drop a little knowledge for everyone, you know, alcoholism and addiction, you know, we just lost Matthew Perry, right? And alcoholism and addiction is a disease. It's a medical disease. And to be considered a medical disease, you need to have four things. You need to be progressive, meaning you get worse over time, chronic, always there, primary, first, not secondary, and fatal. And if you meet all four qualifications, you're actually a medical disease. Now, if you take one of those away, you're a disorder. You know, and disorders are bad enough, as we know. But it took me 15 years to become an alcoholic and have the disease of alcoholism and addiction.
Mm-hmm. And you're 100% sober.
110% sober.
Yes, and I love that. And this hits home for me because 5 years ago, my mother passed away in my home unexpectedly and had an autopsy and revealed that being an alcoholic herself was the secondary reason for her passing away. Did she die of a heart condition? Sure. But why, you start peeling back the why behind the why, it all came down to, I mean, it literally says on her thing, what's it called? The autopsy report. Yeah. That, you know, she died of being an alcoholic. And I know, like, I gave her eulogy and I know why she died. She died because she didn't have worth and she didn't love herself enough. And she was so insecure. And you are talking to the right person too, because a lot of times we model our parents' behaviors, yeah, and their actions. And so being raised by a mother who was insecure created a lot of insecurities in my own life. Like, people never knew it. But I was super insecure in high school too. Like, but I was the cheerleader, the president of student council, the homecoming queen, the this, that, state champion in track. But inside I was hurting, right? And I never felt good enough of myself until someone else said, oh, Dawn, you're so good. That's why I needed to be the best at everything, because I wasn't the best inside. So I understand you. I was, you know, I never became an alcoholic, but I'm addicted to work and success and just maybe a different avenue of addiction. But, you know, we start to model our parents' behaviors. Yeah. And so I lost my mother because of alcohol abuse and tried so many times to help her. And she did go through AA and then felt short and, you know, like whatever her story is, because this is really about you, but it's the connection of why I do what I do. Why you do what you do for a profession is because I'm helping people become enough with their wealth. You're helping people become enough with their mindset.
Yeah.
And they're right. And so we all struggle with this enoughness. I think, and this insecurity that we all have, and there's only some of us that have gone through so much pain, Adam, like yourself and myself, we're admitting to, like, we're ready to admit it and say, hey, I suffer too. And yeah. I'm okay to talk about it because I've done the work. I've done the mental work. So I know you reach a point in your life where you're like, I got to go through rehab. I got to get sober. I got to turn my life around because this, I'm either going to die or I'm going to live, right? It becomes, you get to that point. What made you, either what made you like take yourself into getting help? Either that, or what was that defining moment where you're like, oh my gosh, like I need to fix this?
Well, those are both great questions. So here's full transparency. My ego would have ridden this thing out till the death. So I needed an intervention. I needed the people that loved me the most to come around me and say, you know, they were these beautiful letters and it was something beautiful about me. And then in the middle, oh yeah, we know what you've been doing. And then something beautiful about me again. And then asking me if I would please get help. And there's a people pleaser inside of me too, by the way. So I'm hearing all these letters and I was not the kind of guy that would be like, ah, you're all crazy. I was like whatever's gonna make the pain stop. Okay, you want me to get up? And that was a whole negotiation too. I remember when they said, you know, it was a 28-day treatment center. I was like, whoa. Who's gonna be Adam Javelin for 28 days? Who's gonna run the show for 28 days? It's a month. You know what I mean? That's a month. Like, where are we gonna say I am? And that's exactly what it was, worrying about other people's perception of me, right? Where are we gonna say Adam is? And, you know, where am I? What am I doing? What am I up to? But I did surrender that day and end up going. And that was the first very, very minor surrender. My sweet surrender, when it really changed on, like you asked, was on day 10. And I had to have, I thought I was going to leave on day 10. I had committed, I'm out of here, day 10, 10-day commitment. And I had to do a whole bunch of exercises, protocols, treatments, therapies along the way. And what they were teaching me, it was, I knew I was sick and I knew I needed the help. There was a poster on the wall, Dawn, that literally had every face drawn with an emotion. This is sad. This is confused. This is happy. This is in pain. And can I tell you something? I was so full of shit. At the end, the only thing I knew how to do was smile at you. If I wanted to kill you, I smiled at you. If I hated you, I smiled at you. If I was worried inside, I smiled at you. I just had one, I was such a phony. So every little thing they were teaching me truly anchored and made sense. And it was the first time I ever got a true connection with God. And I have a bunch of God stories for you if you're ever down for that. But yes, it was day 10 where I really surrendered and said, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict, and I have to stay. And what happened in that moment was what I thought was a prison turned into spiritual camp just from that one decision. And everything in my life shifted. I never looked back.
That's unbelievable. And the God stories. I mean, we can do all the mental development and the personal development and work on our mental health, our emotional health, our spiritual health. We can work on our financial health, all of the stuff. But there's nothing like that spiritual connection. When we need a guide and we need help, we need someone that's bigger than ourselves, right? Because alcoholism is a disease, just like I have a thyroid disease or I have, right? We all have diseases. We all have things in our life. Alcoholism being a little bit different where you can actually change, you know, and take control of that. But it does take that spiritual guidance and the help and the surrendering to something bigger than yourself to be able to fully become healed.
That was beautiful. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I truly believe that.
With your mom. You saw
yes.
it.
Yes. My mom was a Jesus lover. I mean, we go to Target and she's like preaching to get people saved at Target checkout. I'm like, Mom, we're just buying a toothbrush. We're not going to talk about Jesus right now, but she still had the struggle inside, right? She wasn't being, you know, and I think I just heard when you were telling your story of what was that time where it connected with you of, you know, becoming sober and getting help. But it was like until you become true, like admit and be truthful and admitting that you're an alcoholic and admitting that you need help and having that integrity around that is when you can start to feel the other emotions than just smiling, right? Yeah. And you're able to feel more of the things. And because I believe a lot of, like I look at my mom, like I don't think she was ever being truthful to herself. Like she suffered more than any of us did, even though it was hard to be around her a lot, but she was suffering because of her childhood, right? And she doesn't have to like we don't have to say my mom was an alcoholic. You know what? No, my mom had a hard childhood, and she had the subconscious loop going in her head of fear and anxiety and not worthiness and not enough and all that kind of stuff. And that's, you know, she was using alcohol as that Band-Aid, if you will. And you just decided, and other people decide to just not Band-Aid it up, but get to the root cause of it. And it all comes down to really, if you think about it, like, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I literally want to have this authentic, this real and raw conversation. But I believe it all, it really comes down to how you think, and we can control our thinking. We can't always manage or control our emotions, but we can manage them. And I believe our emotions are what, like where we start to feel out of control. And that's where the alcohol makes us feel more like content. So it's our thinking and our emotions. Would you agree with that? Or what did you 100%. Learn in AA?
No, you did, okay. 100%. You know, we think a thought before we feel it. You know, we think, and as a matter of fact, not only do I agree with you, in our 12-step community, what they'd have on many rooms is a sign saying, think, upside down, meaning that's the opposite thing to do, right? Like, don't try to think yourself well.
Oh.
Surrender. No, what you're saying is, I'm combining both of these things.
Yeah.
You're saying kind of changing your mindset with thought, right? We're saying it actually goes hand in hand, right? What we're saying is, but a broken mind can't help a broken mind. So allow us in this 12-step community to pour new information into you, to pour new resources into you, to pour new ideas and beliefs into you, and then use those thoughts, adopt those thoughts as your blueprint and look through those that pair of glasses, mm-hmm. right? So it's faith without works is dead. So it's taking the actions on those new thoughts that you and I were just discussing. And look, how's this? There's many areas of my life that I'm just crushing it. But I believe when it comes to wealth, I bet you could teach me if you were a thing or two. Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. Do you mm-hmm. know what I mean? My finances can go like this. You know, mm-hmm. they really can, especially when I'm building a business and sometimes you're putting more energy out that's coming in. But if I can't admit that, and then listen to the new ideas, the new beliefs, the new thoughts, and then start thinking that way and acting on those, then I'm stuck in that loop.
Mm-hmm. And I think you bring up a great point, because I've done a lot of personal development and, you know, and learning why I think and why I have anxiety, and bringing that behavioral and that action stuff into financial planning. But what I'm here to tell everyone, and I think, Adam, you would agree with me 100%, that the work never goes away.
Yeah.
The brain work, the mental work, the every day that you have to keep on flexing that brain muscle to make sure it's going in the right direction for you. And that, like, you don't just arrive at like, oh, I have the perfect mindset. It's like a constant thing that we're going to have to work on day to day, year to year, decade to decade, all the time, right? You agree with that?
I can't tell you how much I agree with it. I agree with it so much that I could hear a little child inside of me crying that's the way it is, being like, does it have to be like that? I don't want it to be like that. When do we get to hit the pause button? I want some more serenity. I want some more great. Like, that's how much I know you're right.
Yeah. You know, every time it's so hard.
Every time I think I have all the answers to the test, God changes the questions.
Yes, because he wants us to continue to grow.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I suffer with anxiety on airplanes. I don't know if I'm like just the weird one that does it, and it's getting a lot better, but I really like want to get to the spot where I could just go on and be free on that plane and not have to worry about feeling stuck or not in control or all of the things. And I've done so much work. I've taken the classes. I've do all the stuff to help with that because I hate it. It kind of, it limits the life, if you will, if you can't get on an airplane. And so I force myself to always get on the airplane and push through that fear. But it's a constant struggle and work for me. It just doesn't mean like I've cured my, you know, I've cured my fear, I've cured my anxiety, and then it just goes away. It's like it goes away if I'm constantly exercising the brain and setting my new beliefs. And like you called it the blueprint, right? Yeah. Because we just put stories, our fake limiting stories to triggers in our life that can limit our life. And so, it's a constant struggle. And I'm guessing, I mean, the downside to that is that it never goes away, right? And so we feel the childhood screaming and crying like, this is going to be with me forever. Yeah. But the other beautiful thing is that we're connected with this and it gives you the opportunity to help other people because you know what it's like to live in hell. You know what it's like to be insecure. You know what it's like to feel fat and not worthy. And so now you get to help other people with that journey. So tell me a little bit about your business and how you help, your clientele and what do you do for them in your coaching business?
Thank you so much for asking, Dawn. Yeah, I mean, by the way, I loved what you just said. And let me applaud you with what you are doing to conquer your fears of getting on an airplane. You know, I know many, many world-renowned, you and I both know, famous psychologists that, and I forgot there's a term for it, but basically the way to get over the fear is to actually put yourself in the swamp with the fear. You know, if you hate scary movies, you have to watch scary movies. Like, so there's actually a term for it. But I really do applaud you because it's doing the thing that you don't want to do that helps you conquer the fear. And in saying that, the name of my business is The Hero Project. And what I love to do and what I really focus on in groups, large groups, and one-on-one with specific clients is I take people through their hero's journey. But it's The Hero Project's journey. It still has the three basics by Dr. Joseph Campbell, right? Where you leave the home, right? You go on this journey. Then you go through this time of learning new skills, new ideas, new beliefs. You learn the Force, you learn your Neo and the Matrix, all these wonderful ideas. And then there's the return home. And if that's with recovery and sobriety, if that's with fears, anxieties, you know, own personal tortures, if that's with, you know what, I've just been stuck in life. I've just been stuck in my marriage. And I need to find who I am. I need to be who I was always meant to be. I guide my clients through their hero's journey. And it's my favorite thing to do.
Mm. So you take them through this three-step process.
Yeah.
Where they are still a hero, if I'm not mistaken, in their past. They're a hero in their present, and they're going to be a hero in their future. And it's just about recreating their story and how they attach maybe some of those negative experiences that they've experienced in life to something that's more positive?
Exactly. Exactly. You nailed it. You nailed it. That's the, you know, it's, how do I word this without sounding corny? So to be able to take people, let me try to say it without sounding corny, to separate people. There's a separation, right? To separate them from that pain or from that story we were telling you, that loop, we separate them from the alcoholism, the addictions, the anxieties, the fears, the worries. There's a separation part. So we're gonna separate from that. And I am the old wise mentor in that story. So I am the Obi-Wan Kenobi, I am the Morpheus, and we're gonna take them on this journey. And then there's this initiation step, right? There's an initiation process where I start pouring in new ideas, new beliefs. So we'll go over their mission statement, we'll go over their purpose, we'll go over their driving force, we'll go over their values, we'll go over their love languages. Like, we're going really, really deep into the client. I'll teach them about the Kiosku stick, which is a stick of compassion, the Navy SEAL some of the Navy SEAL training about how you have to calm the nervous system to not drown. I mean, we will go deep, but then always, and this is my favorite part, there's the return home. So it's not like I'm working with a client and then they're like, okay, I'm out of here, I'm a superstar. No, you come home and you show your wife, your husband, your spouse, your partner, your kids, the person you've become, and you share with it. When you need, you may know this, but when people need to become a surgeon or a doctor, you have to learn it, you have to learn the operation, then you have to do the operation, and then you have to teach it. It's a three-step process before you can become a surgeon. I do the same thing with my clients. They have to learn it, they have to do it, and then they have to pass it on. And when they pass on some of that knowledge, they actually anchor it. And they go from being the person on the journey, developing all these new skills, to the old wise mentor. So it's a journey that just never stops giving.
And that's a similar journey when people go through AA, isn't that? Like, I remember my mom saying, like, what's the word? Not the mentor, but like
sponsor.
So like you have a sponsor and you sponsor others. Wouldn't that be similar to that? Like where
very similar.
You're passing on the wisdom, really.
Very similar.
And that you really, when you pass on the wisdom to other people, then you're also solidifying and grounding the action, because we can learn so many things, but it's through taking the action and being accountable to the different lifestyle and the different thinking and the different ways of life that really grounds that what you've learned into your life. And it grounds it even more probably when you teach it to other people.
Now I, to be totally, you know, transparent, that is where I personally learned this gift of a mentor and a mentee and a sponsor and somewhat, right? What I did not realize until I went through my own recovery process and became a coach was the Pope has the clergy. You know what I mean? The president has a council. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant had Phil Jackson, right? We all have these people, these role models in our life, these mentors, these sponsors that show us the wisdom and take us on this journey. I happen to have learned it personally in my 12-step community. I didn't realize that there was this everlasting truth-telling story that all of us have that. All of us have it. And I got really blessed on, because when I started the Hero Project, I was able to not just help community with alcoholics and addicts, but it went to mental health and it went to the NBA, Major League Baseball, NFL, because people didn't always want to identify with the disease. Sometimes they wanted to identify with the hero and who they were becoming.
Okay. And that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, the Hero Project, I love it.
Thanks.
Because it seems like everything in life has a mindset, personal development aspect to having them get to the other side. For me in financial planning, I teach people how to maximize their wealth. And I realized that sitting in so many different client meetings, like we would get so precise with their financial plan that they still had this fear-based relationship with money. And it was a mindset. It was an emotion around money of not ever having enough, not being enough. Like sometimes people overspend because they don't feel like they are enough, or people just had this fear of running out of money no matter what they did with their wealth building journey. And so like in your Hero Project, you're taking people through, you're going deep.
Going deep.
Right. And I take people through a deep alignment, a wealth alignment process too, where we're understanding, just like you are, Adam, people's purpose and vision and core values and strengths and weaknesses and goals. Like I got to understand the full person.
Yeah.
And build wealth around that person for many different reasons. Because we, you know, I believe like we have to maximize our time and our money. And when you build the right type of wealth and not just chase more money for the wrong reasons, like you're just wasting your most valuable resource, which is time. So I teach people how to go deep with themselves too. And I love that part. But the reason why, even the shit storms of ourselves, right? The like weaknesses, the stuff that we're not good at, and understanding our full core. Cause to be a human means you suck at a bunch of stuff too. And it's okay. But when you really understand everything about yourself, about your experiences, about your beliefs, about the awareness of the being. I believe it puts you in, I don't know if I want to use the word control, but it puts you more in the driver's seat. And anytime that I'm suffering anxiety or fear, it's because of a lack of control. And I bet that going back to your story, your hero story, when you picked up that first drink and it made you feel comfortable, it was a false feeling, but it made you feel like you were more in control versus all the external bullshit that we live in controlling us. And even though in life we really don't control a lot, we really don't. We live in an uncertain world, but we want to create this certainty. Like there's a, like we have certainty in our being, the good, the weakness, the strengths, like all of us. And I think the message is, you know, as I teach people how to grow their money, you teach people how to grow their mindset. And it comes down to really being comfortable in your own skin and your own journey and you being the hero of your story so you can live your truth and your authentic self.
Amen. That was so beautifully said. As a matter of fact, let's even go back to the beginning of what you just said. When we're humans and we all suck at something, I have an exercise in the Hero Project I call it Spirit Over Scoreboard. And the reason we do that is because in the beginning, you're going to suck. The scoreboard's going to be very low, but we got to keep the spirit high. And you're 1,000% correct with the look, I'll tell you the truth. I'm a certainty junkie. Even to this day, and I stretch myself and I grow and I grow in personal development and I get on all the planes and I do everything I can to push myself to be the best Adam Javelin I can be. But if you were to ask me where I would feel safe, it's not doing those things. It's not doing those things. I'm a certainty junkie. For 23 years, I ran a factory and I knew that factory upwards, backwards, you know, to the left, to the right. I knew from shipping, quality control, you know, warping department, knitting, fabrics, design. You know, I had to know that place like the back of my hand. And when you do something like that, it gives you certainty. So for 23 years, I was a certainty junkie. And now not only am I living in uncertainty and riding this beautiful wave that God gave me, but I'm helping others on it. And that's the hero's journey.
It is. And you know what? The reason why we all want to live in certainty, it all comes down to fear. Everything Amen. Comes down to fear. But if you read the Bible and you believe in a spiritual connection, it tells us, the Bible, the word tells us to not to allow God to take over that fear, right? Allow, like believe in something bigger than yourself. And I'm saying this today with a lot of passion. Because Adam, I'm looking at you on the screen right now, and you are a living, breathing example of either killing yourself or deciding you want to live. And you decided you wanted to live because you need to help more people. There are more people, tons of people in this world that need more people like you. I mean, I just look at you. You're so healthy. Your spirit, I can feel the vibe through that. Like, I just want to hug you. And what a gift you are to your clients. What are you're a gift to everybody that you come in contact with. And everybody needs your service. And everyone needs your spirit and your soul. And we gotta get more people connected to you if you even have the capacity. But because it's about having this real conversation about what's going on internally with all of us. And we are fearful human beings. And we don't need fear to define how we choose to live our life, but we have to walk through it. And you've done that. I've done that. And we both know that when we are solving this enoughness, we can't do it alone.
Amen.
We need each other and we need the guide. Yes.
Amen.
Yes. And what a gift. Adam, thank you. Thank you. Go ahead.
No. I just wanted to piggyback on something you said. You know, you said if you have the capacity. I don't know. I was going to ask you if you've experienced the same thing. Every time I think I don't have the capacity, God, Spirit makes the capacity, makes the room for it. You know, every time I think I don't have one more ounce to give. I don't have one. I can't take on one more client. I have no more love in my heart. I am maxed out. Something happens. Something shifts. And you know, and that was something I'd like to admit to you, Dawn, and anyone listening. That voice is still in my head. That I'm capped out, I'm maxed out, fear, insecurity, certainty, I'm done, you know, and it's in not being a people pleaser and not knowing when to say no. Those are two totally different categories. But in that stretching ourselves just a little bit, that something happens. Something miraculous happens. And you get all the gifts.
Yeah. Yes. And continue to stretch yourself, Adam, because this world needs more of you. So tell us where people can find more of Adam Jablin and the Hero Project.
Thank you for asking. I made it really easy for myself. So it's Adam Jablin on all platforms, right? So from Instagram to LinkedIn to Facebook, if you look up Adam Jablin, you'll find me, and you could either A, contact me directly. I actually use a lot of the DMs on Instagram, or somebody on my team will make sure that we respond quickly, that we're there for you, and that we serve you to the highest of our ability.
Love it. And Jablin is J-A-B-L-I-N.
Yes.
Woo! Woo!
Yes, ma'am.
It was an honor. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Dawn. I'm looking forward to having you on the Hero Project podcast.
I can't wait.
Awesome.
Awesome.